I wonder if we got it now. Nope. What in the hell?
In this episode, I talk with a certain salty character.
Everybody in the audience, who's going cruising? And they all up with the hands.
Who's got a lot to say about how not to sail?
It just keeps getting closer because time does not stop.
He's not afraid to be controversial.
I like your license plate there.
Yeah, need more weed.
So lock up the kiddies. We're talking with Captain Bob Bitchin. How Not to Sail. Sponsored this episode by our awesome Patreon patrons like Captain Don. Also by BobBitchin.com and the Bob Bitchin YouTube channel. Latitudes and Attitudes, America's number one boating lifestyle magazine. And the book, How Not to Sail, which even I can find easily at HowNotToSail.com. So, I broke my usual rule against doing remote recordings, but if there's anyone who knows more about how not to sail than me, it's gotta be this week's victim. I was actually able to do video as well, but it seems Bob's connection was so slow that his high-resolution video became weird, spastic, low-resolution video about two-thirds of the way through. So yeah, kinda like your typical cruise. The How Not to Sail YouTube channel is kind of like a box of chocolates anyway.
I mean, yeah. Personally, I just like to call people
There's a bleep for you.
Sorry.
If you haven't seen any of the YouTube videos, I highly recommend going to HowNotToSail.com/YouTube and check them out. But if you're already rolling the audio here on your favorite podcast app, carry on. You can always check out the video afterwards and see if Captain Bitchin looks as wild as you expected.
Got it now? No, nothing now? No.
I got Bob on the horn from his office in the mountains of California.
What in the hell?
We had a little issue with the new technology.
When I see you, you're very pixelated. Am I pixelated when you see me?
But finally, we got down to brass tacks.
Well, no, I can tell them how not to sail, and that is don't set a date to leave.
To get the ball rolling, Captain Bitchin tells me what he considers the best way not to sail.
At a lot of my seminars, the first thing that we do is I ask, okay, everybody in the audience, who's going cruising? And they all up with the hands. And then I say, who's set a date already? And two or three people will put up their hand. And I said, they're going cruising. The rest of you are just dreamers. Because until you set a date, you're not going cruising. And once you set a date, it's amazing how fast that date approaches. Whether it's 5 years from now, or 3 years from now, a year from now, 10 years from now, it just keeps getting closer because time does not stop. So set the date.
So if you want to know one of the best ways not to go cruising, there you have it. Don't set a date. And just in case you have your heart set on exotic destinations, Bob has some great advice on how not to sail to Hawaii.
It was my first crossing to Hawaii, so I wanted to do it the traditional way.
Yep, Bob wanted to navigate using a sextant. They've gotten sailors more or less where they want to go for hundreds of years. So what could possibly go wrong? Bob also had the latest in 20th century technology as well, a radio direction finder. But not wanting to cheat, he turned it off.
I got to a point where I was trying to learn how to take star sights, and I could not. So I settled on a noon sight.
The thing about taking a noon sight is, once you get the sun all lined up properly in the sextant, you then consult a book full of numbers and either add or subtract a number called the declination in order to figure out where you are on the ocean. In theory, at least.
We were doing pretty good coming down the coast of Baja California in December. But when we took off in January across to Hawaii, I kept getting weird readings because I was doing the celestial, but I was also keeping a manual record of how many miles we got and in what direction.
That manual record is called a dead reckoning. What you do is basically take your average speed and direction since the day before, maybe allow for the current if you're fancy, and make an educated guess where you are on the ocean deep. And hopefully, when you make a pencil mark on the chart of the position you got from your noon sight calculations, it'll be within a couple of miles of the mark you made showing your dead reckoning position, and you'll feel good about your life expectancy.
And those dots kept getting farther apart on the chart, farther and farther apart.
In fact, Bob's calculations put him about 800 miles ahead of where the dead reckoning said they were, which is kind of a big deal. He started to wonder how to break the news to his crew and how bad the taunting would be once he revealed he didn't actually know where in the wide Pacific they were.
And then about 6 or 7 days out, we saw a boat. It was called the Bass Pike. It was a fuel transport. And I got him on the radio and I said, hey, can you give us a position? And he says, yeah, we just got this brand new thing. It's a sat-nav. And I can see you, and I can tell you how fast you're going, what direction you're going, and where you are. And I said, cool, where? And he gives me the position. And I look at my chart, and it's back where the dead reckoning was.
Okay, so it's nice that the dead reckoning is right, at least. But Captain Bitchin is now pretty confused as to why his sextant calculations are so badly screwed up.
So I started getting worried, and I didn't tell my crew, because, you know, they're counting on me. And this was my first crossing.
So Bob started looking at the numbers, and looking at the numbers, and looking at the numbers some more.
I finally realized that when I was coming down the coast, it was December, and you added the declination. But then when we left Cabo after New Year's, it changed to where you're supposed to subtract the declination. And I kept adding it because I was doing it in my head. And so we would jump ahead 10 miles the first day, 15 the second, 25 the next, 35 the next.
Bob was relieved, and presumably his crew none the wiser. But like anyone cruising, I suppose, Bob's navigational trials were far from over. They sail on towards Hawaii, and Bob's getting accurate noon sights. Finally, when they're about 70 miles from the islands, they see the sunset between Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea on the Big Island. It seems as if Bob and the crew have reached the end of their first major ocean crossing.
That night, a little storm blew in. So all of a sudden, we had 35, 40 knots on our nose, and we just started tacking and beating and trying to hold the position. At about 2 o'clock in the morning, our staysail sheet broke loose with the rub rail and was now flailing about, flapping in the wind with about 60 pounds of metal and wood hanging on the end of it. It came around, it slapped the back of the boat, and it broke one of the back windows. So now we're in a storm, we've got a broken window, so, you know, water comes splashing in there. We finally get everything tied down and fixed up, and what we did was we just took a big tube of silicone seal and sealed the whole window.
After 3 exhausting days of being blown away from their destination, Bob and his crew finally approach the Big Island of Hawaii again and make for Radio Bay.
And in Radio Bay, we're still not seeing the island. The sky was blue, there was no clouds. According to my calculations, we're like 3 to 5 miles from the island. They've got 2 12,000-foot peaks. We should see them.
Bob is mystified as to why they can't spot a couple of 2-mile-tall volcanoes that should be right in front of them. Until finally, out of nowhere, they spot a Chris Craft pulling a skier headed right toward them.
And so I wave them over. And they come over and I say, hey, where's Hilo? Where's Radio Bay? And they point, right there, 3 miles. What happened was a little thing called, what was it? That the volcano that's still going off? It caused a atmospheric disturbance, like a mist in the air, that you couldn't see 2 miles.
So between a 3,000-mile crossing, a pretty large navigational error, a Kona storm, a broken stern window, and almost running into the Big Island of Hawaii, Bob and his intrepid crew discovered a lot of things not to do.
That was how not to sail to Hawaii.
If you've read Bob's books or his pieces in Latitudes and Attitudes magazine, which he founded, you'll know that Bob is the king of the simile. You know, phrases like busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. And I'm guessing it won't be more than 15 seconds before he drops another beauty.
What was the place where you scraped the keel? Was that near Panama or Central America? Isla Mujeres? Or?
It was all over the world. My boat saw more bottom than a toilet seat. We hit bottom in Bora Bora. We hit bottom in Raiatea in the South Pacific. We hit bottom in Belize. We hit bottom in Mexico. We hit bottom in... Oh, I don't need to go on.
Ah, but go on we shall. Right after I thank our awesome Patreon patrons. And just as a reminder, you can help keep How Not to Sail afloat for as little as $3 a month. Just go to hownottosail.com/Patreon and find the level of support that suits your fancy. The bigger the crew, the more time I can spend on the podcast. But not to worry, if you're not in a position right now to contribute in dollars, doubloons, or ducats, you can help out by simply telling a friend about How Not to Sail. And if you feel extra irie and want to leave a nice 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, I won't be mad about that at all. But irregardless, as my friend and patron Bill would say, I have a feeling Captain Bob Bitchin has some more great advice on how not to sail.
I'm trying to think of another good how not to that.
Okay, here's a how not to sail. Never enter a strange harbor at night, period.
I can definitely attest to this one, along with my discovery early on that not all channel buoys are lit at night, and that if you're not careful, you may find yourself gliding by a multi-ton silhouette so close you could reach out and touch it as it towers over the deck. Not that that ever happened to me in the summer of 2013 when I was entering Boca Grande Harbor alone, and when I may or may not have run out of fuel, which is usually a nice thing to have in case you're beating into an unknown channel in a stiff breeze. But anyway, Bob's story takes place in an even more exotic location than South Florida, and almost 30 years earlier.
So we were approaching Nuka Hiva in the Marquesas, and we were going to get there about 3 in the afternoon. It was going to be perfect, and we're just sailing along, and all of a sudden the winds start to die. So we start the engine, and we keep motoring, and all of a sudden the motor quits. And as you know, when a motor quits, it's one of three things. It's either fuel, fuel, or fuel. In our case, it was fuel.
At least in Bob's case, the problem was in the fuel supply system, and not that he'd simply run out of diesel, which I've never done once or twice.
It took about an hour and a half to figure out where the problem was. We fixed it, fired it up, and then we realized we're going to get in after dark into a harbor we have never seen, and in the South Pacific where they have reefs and coral and stuff.
It's a pitch black night, overcast, with no moon. And Bob's coming in under radar.
And I don't know if you've ever come into a harbor under radar, but it does not look on the radar like it looks in reality.
As Bob's coming into the harbor, he's seeing about a mile-wide entrance to a fjord, which should have a beach somewhere beyond it. But the water depth is getting kind of skinny.
And we're watching the depth sounder, and we're going, and it's going 50, 40, 30, 20. And we're not even close to the beach yet. So I heard, okay, this is it.
Not being able to see anything and not wanting to push his luck, Bob decides to drop anchor and wait out the night.
In the morning, the sun comes up and we're in paradise. We are easily a half a mile from each wall on the sides of us.
Okay, so not every breaking of the rules results in maiming or painful death, just sometimes. So it really comes down to that classic question.
Do I feel lucky?
So that's how not to enter a harbor.
In my case, I just forget that I have a radar all the time because I usually turn it off because it sucks up battery.
Right.
But I notice that it is handy when you have fog and things like that or thunderstorms.
I can tell you where it's not handy. When you're in a group of islands like the Tuamotus, where the highest point on the island is 8 feet.
Besides the fact that these islands barely stick out of the water at high tide, there's another issue.
All of the charts in the Tuamotus were done in the 16, 1700s. So all of them are known to be 3 to 5 miles off their charted position. So when you're sailing at night, if you have your radar on, it don't matter because you can't see the island. So what we would do is we would give a 5 mile berth to any island we're trying to pass.
This worked fine until they were leaving French Polynesia, where the last so-called island isn't really an island at all, but more like a submerged reef.
And it was known to be 3 to 5 miles off its course, so I was given a 5 mile berth to this.
In June of 2005, Bob's friend John Silverwood had given the Motu a 3 mile berth. John destroyed his catamaran on the reef, lost his leg when the mast fell on him, and darn near died.
I was on watch, 2 o'clock in the morning. All of a sudden, we started getting this stuff called ball lightning, where it's a flash, but no thunder, and you hear more of a sizzling than anything. And that happened, and about less than a quarter mile in front of me was a 10 to 12 foot breaking wave. I'm heading right for it.
So Bob's starting to wonder if he's seeing things. First of all, here's this weird electrical storm with no thunder, and here's what looks like a reef where it should be hundreds, if not thousands, of feet deep.
So I look out around the Dodger and see if it's real. Yeah, it's real. Another ball of lightning comes up and there's breaking surf up there. So I make an immediate starboard and go out about another 2 miles. And every time I see a ball of lightning, I look back and I'm getting a picture of this reef that has 10 to 12 foot breakers breaking on it. And it's 5 miles off its charted course. That's how not to sail. It's not good.
It takes a certain kind of person to be a successful cruiser. Nah, strike that. There are all kind of people cruising. But if you're going to be putting yourself out there on the ocean, fixing exhaust elbows with beer cans, or trying to navigate with a sextant, it helps to have a sense of humor.
Who was the one you taught the Spanish phrase to? Was it the English guy?
No. That was Andy.
Sometimes, being in the vicinity of Captain Bitchin, you may need a sense of humor.
I'd known Andy before we took off. I'd known him for about 2 or 3 years in the marina, and he was a fun drinking partner.
Andy was also a ladies' man.
We're heading down to Mexico, and he doesn't speak any Spanish.
Unfortunately, Andy asks Bob for advice.
And I said, it was very simple. You just say, su madre es en la calle con su perro.
Bob tells Andy that it means, you're beautiful, and would you have a drink? It does not mean that.
Su madre es en el calle con su perro means, your mother is in the street with your dog.
So they get to Mexico, and Andy's wondering why his dating life has taken a turn for the worse.
And finally, one of the ladies that he hit, who spoke English as well, explained to him that he was very insulting.
Bob's good for practical jokes like that. And as you can tell, he's even better at talking story. I decide we should set up the usual sort of podcast back-scratching.
Why don't I let you do a... So, how would people find you if they want to find you?
So, Bradford, here's the thing. How not to say, how do people find you if they want to find you?
Oh, I was going to do that for you.
Oh, then do that.
So, Bob, how would people find you?
Usually under the bar about 2 a.m. or YouTube, Bob Bitchin, or BobBitchin.com, which links to all of that. And it also links to my radio show, Pirate Radio, Saturdays at noon.
And replay on Wednesdays at 8 p.m.?
How'd you know that? So we need anything to wrap this thing up?
You could do an ID, you know, this is Bob Bitchin and...
This is Bob Bitchin and you're listening to the How Not to Sail Broad. Cut. This is Bob Bitchin and you're listening to the How Not to Sail podcast.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
You got it. And I'm going to send you that video right after we hang up. Take care.
Now, Now hold on, don't go anywhere. I just wanted to take advantage of this opportunity to announce the all-new, redesigned How Not to Sail store at HowNotToSail.com. There you can find not only the book How Not to Sail, but also some cool swag. Show off your proud How Not to Sailor-ness with a t-shirt or a hoodie or a mug or a mouse pad. You name it, it's there at HowNotToSail.com/store, or just look for store in the menu from anywhere at HowNotToSail.com. If there's anything you want that you can't find, let me know. Of course, I want to thank our awesome Patreon crew, including our newest patron, Don. You can keep How Not to Sail afloat for as little as $3 a month at HowNotToSail.com/Patreon, or just look for the ubiquitous Patreon links at HowNotToSail.com. Are you starting to see a pattern here? That's right, you can find everything How Not to Sail at HowNotToSail.com. Big thanks to Latitudes and Attitudes magazine, America's number one boating lifestyle magazine. And to our friend Captain Bob Bitchin. I just finished narrating 5 of Bob's books, and I'll put links to them in the new and improved How Not to Sail store as they come online. Speaking of audiobooks, our friend Maxi Freeney has been helping me with those. He's having a great time gallivanting around the globe with the lovely Diana, except for the part where Delta totally messed up his transatlantic flight and left their luggage in the rain and gave him some rewards they could hardly use. I suspect we're about to catch up with Maxi very shortly to see what he's up to. Big thanks to Jim for keeping my boat from corroding to death in the salt water. He's great at killing hornets, too. And to Jerry for very patiently supervising me in cleaning my 40-year-old Yanmar 3QM30 diesel engine. Jerry does boat deliveries, too, so hit me up if you need his services. Last but certainly not least, I want to wish our friend and Sailing Master patron, Wayne Stennett, a speedy recovery. Hope you're back to lifting those weights again soon, and we are eagerly awaiting your 473rd novel at WayneStennett.com. Meanwhile, keep your eye on the markers so you don't run into them, and I'll see you next time on How Not to Sail. Screwing up is part of cruising. Let me show you how.
And, yeah. Okay, now I have to go buy some headphones. See what you did to me?